Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll get an update on Minnesota's honor flights, and we'll check in with the Military Order of the Purple Heart. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Keeping a marriage strong enough to thrive through the unique challenges of a military deployment is important to our nation's military. The Army first introduced this idea in 1997 with their program, Building Strong and Ready Families. They brought together 90 active duty couples to participate in what could be called a retreat, and it was received with enthusiasm. Since then, the Army has welcomed more than 160,000 couples to their improved marriage program, now called Strong Bonds. Here in Minnesota, our chaplain-led Strong Bonds program is also helping couples grow together. One week in a month, all summer long, Strong Bonds retreats are being held at various locations throughout the state. During a weekend-long event, couples spend most of their time in discussions or practicing effective communication skills. As a couple and in a small group setting, they learn about expectations, commitment, forgiveness, and feeling understood. Those who have attended really get a kick out of a Saturday night assignment to go out on a date. In the National Guard, we encourage service members and their spouses to attend a Strong Bonds event in lieu of a weekend drill. This affords them extra time devoted to communicating with each other, makes our service members healthier and stronger leaders in our ranks. Our chaplains also have a program for our single service members to have an empowering weekend of internal growth. For more information on the Strong Bonds retreats, visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Joining me now is a friend of the show and a frequent visitor to the studio, Jerry Kaiser, who operates the Honor Flights to Twin Cities. Jerry, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. It's a great day.
I'm good. Glad to see you didn't get lost. You remembered how to come back to the station and join us to talk about these honor flights.
Yes, sir.
Now, Jerry, before we get into that, you are a Vietnam veteran. Can you tell us about your service, military service?
I was joined the United States Army after 4 years of college at North Dakota and decided I'd be a helicopter pilot. But they decided that I needed to be a helicopter crew chief first because I had a hearing loss. I did what they said, and I went through the classes and was deployed to Vietnam in 1968, just after the Tet Offensive. It was a rude awakening to getting there. Right away, you find out that the bad guys don't like you very well. But we, I was there for just 11 and a half months in the 1st Infantry Division, about 20 miles north of Saigon. I was a mechanic and worked on helicopters. Then we went out and retrieved shot down aircraft. It was always an interesting day because the enemy, that's when they laid for you, tried to take out another two helicopters trying to get the ones who were shot down. So,
and on that first deployment, you were a door gunner.
I was a substitute door gunner, just trying to figure out what's going on.
And you went back for a second tour in 1969.
Yes, I did. I came back to go to flight school, but they wanted me to re-enlist, and I told them I may be a little crazy, but I wasn't stupid. I wanted to get back and be around the people who could. I felt I was bulletproof. That's kind of a silly thing, but I thought so. So I went back to the 1st Aviation Brigade, and I ended up being the building battalion commander's crew chief, and we flew all over the 3 and 4 Corps part of Vietnam.
And Jerry, you survived both of those tours, I'm glad to say, and got back here, and you got out of the Army in August of 1970, and then you had the GI Bill working for you. What'd you do with that?
I went back to college at the University of North Dakota and got a degree in business and aviation, became a commercial pilot.
And honor flights. How and when did you get involved in the honor flights?
Well, I've been in the Twin Cities for many years. I came down here in 1974 and really did not want to get involved with anything in the military or the veterans groups or anything like that. I had undiagnosed post-traumatic stress, and I was not a happy camper. I was kind of bitter about all that, how we were treated, until I got involved with the Vietnam veterans here in Minnesota, and I ended up being the president of that organization, the state organization, for 4 years. But I was approached in 2008 by a director from the regional, from the headquarters in Ohio, and asking if I'd start one. And I thought, gee, that'd be a great thing. My father was a World War II veteran. He passed away on me. I just thought this would be a thing to do, to honor these World War II veterans. And my father and mother, who had both passed away, and that's how I got started. Started in 2008. We've had 14 trips, and it's been quite a journey.
We're speaking with Jerry Kaiser of the Twin Cities Honor Flights on Minnesota Military Radio. Jerry, for our listeners that may not have heard you, you've been on talking about this almost every year because you have these flights every year. What is an honor flight, and what happens?
An honor flight is an organization that takes for free to Washington, D.C., World War II and Korean veterans, in my case, to see their memorials dedicated to their service and sacrifice that they made during those wars. It is totally free for them, and we go down in a one-day trip. It's about 22 hours by the time they get up in the morning and they get back at night, and it is, in fact, the greatest day in their life. They are well taken care of. Everything is pre-planned. We have luxury buses. We treat them well. They have a guardian with them, not so much as they're incapable of walking around themselves, but they are treated like four-star generals.
Now, Jerry, did all of this start? Did it coincide with the beginning of the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C.?
It did nationally. The gentleman who started, Earl Morris, was a physician's assistant in Ohio, and he had some World War II veterans that he asked if they would like to go there. And he was a pilot, and he got about six other pilots together, and they flew 12 World War II veterans to that memorial in 2005, and they started on a national basis to do this. Since then, over 145,000 veterans have been to Washington, D.C. to see their memorials. And we're going to continue that in Minnesota until I run out of World War II and Korea veterans and money.
I don't think you're going to run out of that, Jerry. Now, when you go on that day, they're mostly World War II veterans, but you have some Korean War veterans. Do you see more than just the World War II Memorial? Do you see the Vietnam Memorial, the Korean Memorial?
Yes, we do. We leave here at 6 o'clock, 0600. We get there at 9:30. It takes us a bit to get loaded up. We go over to the Iwo Jima Memorial first and have a little memorial there for all those Marines that sacrificed their life. Then we go to the Women's Memorial and show what they did. They supported Americans here and overseas. Then we go to the Air Force Memorial, have lunch there, go to the World War II Memorial, having another ceremony where we honor one of the fallen, either one of the guardians or one of the father or mother, or else one of the veterans who couldn't make it on the trip passed away. And we have taps for that. They go to the Korea, Vietnam, and Lincoln Memorial. And more poignant to all of them is going to the changing of the guard and the lowering of the flag at Arlington. It is a very somber moment for them. There's 400,000 folks there at Arlington, and these men and women really cherish the moments of just thankfulness that they're able to be alive and honor those who left.
So you cover a lot of ground in that one day trip.
Yeah, we don't let the grass grow too quickly, and they need to be can't be wheelchair bound. They need to be mission ready. And sometimes I'm very cognizant of their health situation, and safety is everything.
Jerry, we're going to have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have one of your guardians who was on a recent trip with you. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what goes on during that one-day-long trip for our World War II veterans and some of our Korean veterans. And if any of our listeners know a World War II veteran near the Twin Cities that wants to go on this flight, go to honorflighttwincities.org to find more information. Jerry, be happy to talk to you. So we're speaking with Jerry Kaiser from Honor Flight Twin Cities on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Jerry Kaiser from the Twin Cities Honor Flights today about these trips he takes out to Washington, D.C. with the World War II and Korean veterans to go out and visit all the memorials and so forth. And also joining us with Jerry today, we have a guardian, but it's someone who's been on the show before when he was a lieutenant colonel in the Minnesota Air National Guard, Terry Sieben. Terry, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. Great to be back.
Terry, I understand you recently retired.
I sure did on the 1st of May, 28 years of service.
28 good years?
Yes, sir. Great years. Fantastic.
And you enjoyed your time in the Air National Guard.
I sure did.
Now, you got to join Jerry for one of these honor flights recently as a guardian.
I sure did. It was a great, amazing experience.
When did you go, and how long a day was it?
April 11th is when we went. I think it was lucky number 13 flight, if I remember right. And it was just a fantastic day. My neighbor originally had signed up to go. He's a retired police officer in the town of Hastings where I live, Ron Hilmer, and he had some health issues and kind of was trying to work through some stuff and asked me to take his place. He knew I was retiring, knew that my dad was a retired service member in World War II and his father-in-law, and he kind of wanted to participate in it on behalf of those two gentlemen, and didn't think he could do it emotionally. Just he thought it was going to be kind of tough. So he just said, "Do you want to do it?" And I said, "You bet." I was honored.
So had you been familiar with the honor flights before that?
A little bit, seen, you know, the clips on the news and that type of stuff, and knew of it. And I was so excited to participate on his behalf.
But you hadn't experienced meeting Jerry Kaiser before that?
I had not.
And that's quite an experience, isn't it?
It sure is. Yes, sir.
Well, he does quite a job. Can you tell us a little bit, what was the day like? It was a long day.
It was just amazing, as Jerry alluded to or talked a little bit. We were there at dark 30. I think 5:30 is when the Guardians needed to show up. And we got out of there about, 10:30 that night. So up at the Humphrey Terminal, Terminal 2. And it was just an amazing event from the onset of the training sessions that we went through, a couple events we had to participate in prior to the actual day. And then the day itself went so fast, and it was just an amazing, amazing experience. So well orchestrated and organized, and just it was just like a military machine.
So, and you had a plane full of veterans and guardians?
We sure did. I think it was 73, if I remember. It was 73 or 78, maybe?
78.
Yeah, 78. And then us guardians and vets, and it was packed. We basically owned the plane. It was a Sun Country aircraft, and we got on at 06, I think. I think we took off at 06:30, and it was a whirlwind tour.
Were the World War II guys a little bit excited when they were taking off?
Oh, boy, were they. There was guys that were there well before me, and it was just amazing. The gentleman that I had the pleasure to escort, his name is Bud Alwich, and he is out of Lakeville. And his brother-in-law, Frank, was also on the plane. They were both Army veterans and were drafted into the war, and were just great guys to accompany there.
Now, the World War II guys are late 80s, early 90s.
They sure are. And
the day didn't wear them out?
It did not at all. And these guys in the honor flight world know what they're doing. They had plenty of wheelchairs and that type of stuff in reserve that if our folks got a little bit tired, and we were trained very well in the two training sessions before the event and were kind of prepared for the emotional factors that were going to happen besides the physical factors.
We're speaking to Jerry Kaiser and retired Lieutenant Colonel Terry Sieben about Honor Flight Twin Cities on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Jerry, we didn't touch on this, but I know you've been raising money for these flights for years, but the veterans travel free. Is that correct?
That is correct. And gentlemen and ladies like Terry and others, they help with a contribution of $500 to make these flights go. It, quite frankly, cost about $79,000 per flight, and it is daunting to do that, to get the money for it, and they help it quite a bit. I'm responsible for the rest of the funds. And our benefactors are just wonderful. People ask me, who does your fundraising? I says, well, it's such a noble cause, such a wonderful thing for people for these World War II. The good Lord Jesus does is my fundraising. We just cash the checks. And I'm not kidding you. It comes in unannounced to me, and I'm just flabbergasted by it. I just, it's emotional, and it's people hear about it, and they call me up, and I talk to them, and they give me some money.
Now, these veterans that go on the trip, are they live within, what, 50 miles of the Twin Cities?
Well, I am going out a little further, about 75 miles. That gets enough time that they can get in and not be too worn out. It's a large population of World War II and Korea veterans in that area, and that's an advantage we have. But it takes a lot of them because, unfortunately, as they get older, things come up within, they fall down, get sick, can't go. Some of them pass away. Other things happen. So we have to have, about 100 to 105 or 10 World War II veterans on the list to get 75 to 80.
Now, you're scheduled two of these 100 flights for 2016?
Yes, I have.
Mm-hmm. And you're starting to fill them up now?
Yes, we are, and we'll be full. We'll have plenty of people to do that, and our next flight is April 16th, and then I'll do another one after that, and I'll continue then with Korea. Probably the next one will be mostly World War II veterans, and I'll factor in the Korea fellas, and they need to have their time there too. They were kind of forgotten. The World War II gentlemen are in a survival mode, and I take them out of that and put them into a mode where they're being properly honored. Some of them have never had this kind of acculation and support that they get on this trip.
Yeah, and the Korean War Memorial is a terrific memorial too, especially at night. It's a beautiful memorial.
Unfortunately, we won't be there at night, but it is an awesome one also.
So for our listeners, if you know any World War II veterans or Korean veterans within 50 or 60 miles of the Twin Cities, go to honorflighttwincities.org and make a connection with Jerry. And if you've got a friend that wants to do that and you want to be a guardian, go to the same place. You can fill out an application and donate a fee of tax deductible $500, and you can go along on this long day and experience it. And Terry, I want to come back to you. For the veteran that you were escorting and the rest of the veterans on the plane, must have been some emotional moments during that day.
It sure was, and it started right on the airplane where they had us contact family members and get letters and things like that, that during the plane ride down, they had what they call mail call, and we were then started handing the letters to the veteran, and they started reading them. And many of those men, and I think we had one woman on our flight, they were a little teared up there. They were a little bit surprised and touched, and it just kind of went from there. The emotions when we arrived at the airport at Reagan National, the crowds there were just welcoming us and hugging the veterans and shaking their hands. And everywhere we went, they were treated like four-star generals, like rock stars. It was amazing.
And on the way back, it was a whirlwind day, as Jerry has told us. A lot of things to see and do, and you just keep them moving. They're pretty well worn out?
Not in the least. I don't think I saw anybody napping or sleeping or anything. Everybody was very excited. And it was a long, long haul, but it was the way these guys have this set up, all the memorials that we visit and everything is just precision. And arriving back at the airport, we had the family members were welcome to come and welcome them back. And that was really a neat emotional thing, too.
So they were charged up all the way home. And Jerry, there was a big crowd welcoming them back. When
we had over 350 people there. We had over 20 military officers and enlisted and cadets from the University of Minnesota and other places. Guardium, it was magnificent. Mm. And the families it just goes on and on and on how they can't believe that their father did that. And the World War II veterans are just magnificent. They never had a day like this in their life, and it's a spiritual, emotional day for them, and they will never, ever forget that.
Big day for our World War II veterans. You've done it 14 times, two more times coming up next year. Jerry, just got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Yes. I want them to, anyone who is interested in this, just to can give me a call. It's a noble thing for them to have the family members are the ones that get their parents to go, or somebody else. The old World War II guys are not looking for this. You need to cajole them and to ask them if they should go, and have them talk to me, and I'll convince them. It's a grand thing for them to have, and it's an honor for me to honor them with this trip.
And for more information, once again, go to honorflighttwincities.org. Jerry, thanks for joining us again today, and good luck with those two trips next year.
Yes, sir. Thank you,
Colonel
very much.
Seaman, thanks for sharing your thoughts on Honor Flight Twin Cities
Thank
with
you,
us.
Tom. You bet. It's a noble cause, and it's amazing.
That was Jerry Kaiser and retired Lieutenant Colonel Terry Seaman talking about the Honor Flights. Please stay with us. In a moment, we'll come back and check in with the Military Order of the Purple Heart on Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to visit with the Military Order of the Purple Heart. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
This week, the Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, or MACV as I like to call them, is hosting the Stand Down to Reach and Assist Homeless Veterans. The Stand Down will take place August 4th and 5th at the base camp at Fort Snelling. Stand Downs are collaborative events coordinated between the local VA, government agencies, and community agencies who serve the homeless. It is an incredible sight to see all the various providers come together and provide a much-needed safety net for our veterans. This net can take many forms, including food, shelter, clothing, health screening, VA and Social Security benefits counseling, and referrals to a variety of other necessary services. I want to thank MACV for organizing this incredible event and others like it year after year in various areas across the state.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the Department Commander of the Military Order of the Purple Heart Organization here in Minnesota, Glenn Bakke. Glenn, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom, and I'm glad you invited me here today to be interviewed, and I'm really looking forward to this.
Glenn, we want to talk a little bit about your military career. I understand you were in the Army back in the Vietnam days.
That is correct. I was drafted on April 1st, 1969.
Never forget the date, do you?
No, it was an April Fool's Day joke, I thought at the time, but in reality it wasn't. I was drafted and went into the U.S. Army and went through basic training and advanced individual training at bases in the States here, and then within about 4 months I was over in Vietnam. I was stationed with the 3rd Battalion, 22nd Infantry unit, which was connected with the 25th Infantry Division. I was located near, most of the time, near Tainan City itself. There was a big military complex there, but most of the time we were out living in the jungle. And my unit is kind of important. I didn't realize it at the time, though, but Oliver Stone, that produced the movie Platoon, was in my same unit about 10 months before I got there, but I did not see him. So I tell everybody that the movie Platoon, I was in the pilot movie, the real life pilot movie.
You wrote the script for him.
Well, I didn't write the script, but...
You lived it.
I lived it, yes.
So how long was your tour in Vietnam? It was meant to be 13 months?
Our tour was normally 12 months, and I was wounded on February 19th, 1970, and then the next day I was wounded again, and that was significant because of the wounds. I was medevaced back to the United States about a week and a half later and spent the next 8 months in a hospital back here in the United States, going through multiple surgeries and convalescing at home and whatnot. So my tour in Vietnam was about 6 months and 10 days total.
And a long time ago, wasn't it?
A long time, 45 years ago.
So when you came back, you've said you went through a lot of rehab, and you've had a number of surgeries on your leg?
Yes, I've had both my legs were affected by the damage that was done to the right when it's associated and connected via what the VA terms connection because of what happened to you. I had 12 surgery. Just had the 12th surgery about 3 months ago. I had to have my left knee replaced. So now both of them have been replaced, and they tell me they want to do another surgery on me on my right ankle. But I think enough is enough for now.
So. Let that heal up and learn the lesson you learned over in Vietnam. One wound wasn't enough. You should have got out of the way for the second one that really hurt.
I didn't realize it at the time. When I was wounded the first time, the wounds were minor. And the night that we went out the second time, I did not have to go with. But, you know, there was this thing about band of brothers. We didn't use that term. I felt I should be there. And
take care of your buddies, and let's go get this job done.
Yes.
Now, Glenn, you've been through a lot since the war. When did you first decide to join any veteran service organization?
I joined a VFW, about 1979 or 1980. It was over in one of the northwest suburbs. I am from South St. Paul, Minnesota, and we have our own VFW down there, and I never thought about joining one. And I just joined it because my father-in-law was a World War II veteran. And we would go there for dinner and stuff, and I didn't think anything about it. Somewhere back in the early 1990s, I signed up with the Disabled American Veterans as a life member. And I've been told that I was a member of the Military Order of the Purple Heart for 1 year back in the middle 1990s. But for the life of me, I don't remember that. About 2006, a light went on in my head, and I said, well, you know, I really should belong to one of these organizations, and I do belong to all of them. I belong to the Vietnam Veterans of America, the Purple Heart, DAV, VFW, and I felt that the Purple Heart was the one that was my main one that I should really get involved with, and that started in 2006.
We're speaking with Glenn Bakke, the Department Commander of the Military Order of the Purple Heart here in Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Glenn, when did you decide you wanted to get involved and run through the chairs and be active in the Military Order of the Purple Heart?
That happened about 3 months after I went to my first meeting. They were looking for an adjutant, and, of course, nobody stuck their hands up. And
you got drafted.
Well, I got drafted, and I was always told don't volunteer for anything either. And I stuck my hand up, and first thing I know, I'm the adjutant. And then I think it was about a year and a half later, I became the senior vice commander for about 4 years. And then I was the commander of the chapter for about a total of about 4 years officially, 5 years unofficially. And then I decided that I would, let's see what's going on at the state level. And then I worked up through junior vice, senior vice, and now I'm the department commander for the state of Minnesota.
Now let's talk about the Military Order of the Purple Heart. Clearly, for anyone to be eligible to join, is it to be wounded in action? Is that what's necessary, or is it just Purple Heart?
The designation says combat related, but there are circumstances where people are wounded by enemy fire indirectly that they didn't know was coming, and so they also qualify. Now the qualifications for the Purple Heart has changed in recent years as far as with the wars over in the Middle East with TBI. Each one of the services has their own criteria for that.
So TBI, traumatic brain injury?
Yes.
Okay. So there's specific requirements, but basically if you're wounded, you're likely eligible.
They're priority number one.
Priority number one. Now, how many members do you have in Minnesota and how many chapters?
We have approximately 1,500 members in the state of Minnesota, about 55,000 nationwide. We have 12 chapters in the state of Minnesota.
And what's your mission here in Minnesota? What type of things you work on?
Well, department level, we have certain missions. Chapter levels are completely different than department level type activities. Chapters do donation drives, try to collect money so that we can donate that to veterans' causes directly. Department level is a little bit more, it's different than a chapter, where it's a much larger scale and a much larger footprint, as I would want to say, you know, with the media and whatnot. It's basically the same, but on a much bigger scale than a chapter would be.
Glenn, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to learn a little bit more about the mission of the Military Order of the Purple Heart organization here in Minnesota. We're talking to Department Commander Glenn Bakke on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Glenn Bakke, the Department Commander of the Military Order of the Purple Heart organization here in Minnesota. He's a U.S. Army veteran, served in Vietnam, was wounded there, received a Purple Heart, and is a member of many veteran service organizations here in Minnesota. And somewhere along the line, he showed up at a meeting of the Military Order of the Purple Heart, and the next thing he knew, he got drafted as in a position in his chapter, and he worked through all those chapter positions and then decided, as long as I've gone that far, I'd go up a department. And department is the state level, Glenn?
That is correct.
And you've worked through the chairs, as they say, up there. So you've been at the state level for, what, 4 or 5 years?
This will be the fourth year.
Fourth year. And what have you learned? What's different about department or the state level of the Military Order of the Purple Heart than maybe you didn't know at the chapter level?
Well, for one thing, it's a lot busier. There's more time that you need to commit to do what it is that you have to do. There's also the connections to other chapters and departments from the entire country that will invariably contact me about various things. Can you do this? Can you do that? Have you got something like this going on in Minnesota? If not, would you like to give it a try or take a look at it? And we take a look at it and we try it. But it's very, very, very busy, very busy.
So you're working on membership because you're always looking for new members to join. And in your case, that'd be any veteran that received a Purple Heart, basically.
Correct.
And then I imagine you're working with the chapters so that they can be lively and vibrant and continue to do things. And then are there various fundraising events and various missions that what type of things do your members work on? Who do you help?
At the chapter level, we usually do a minimum of what we call Viola drives. Each one of the veterans organizations has their own little flower. The VFW has the poppy. We have a Viola, and it's purple in color. And we do these usually around Memorial Day and around Veterans Day. Last year we did a fun shoot. It was at the South St. Paul Rod and Gun Club in South St. Paul. And it was kind of an average turnout for the event, but we did very well on it, and we probably collected a donations that would equal about 1 year's worth of fundraising drives that we would normally do for our Violas in a matter of about 4 hours.
And what do you do with those funds, Glenn?
We donate them. We give to organizations such as the rest stop at the Twin City International Airport for military people that are traveling through the terminal. We donated to various colleges to set up money for veterans' rooms. We made donations to a family in Woodbury. That lost a family member in Afghanistan, a young family. We also contribute to a number of organizations, including the South St. Paul Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, which I'm also a member of that also, and one of the founding officers.
I think you're a joiner, Glenn.
I think I am too. I just can't say no to things like this. But whatever we collect in a year, we try to give it away.
Now, your office is over in the Veteran Service Building over in St. Paul?
That is correct.
So you get to know some of the other commanders of the VFW and the American Legion, and do you get a chance to coordinate activities so you're not duplicating efforts once in a while?
Well, when we're there, there's no set time hours that we go down there. Basically, as we look for mail that's coming in, anything that needs to be processed, we go down there and go in there, and maybe some of the other groups might be there or may not be there. but it's kind of hit and miss when we're down there.
Now, Glenn, I can remember when I got back from Vietnam, the World War II guys that were out in the Veteran Service Organizations I joined right away by accident, and I got elected the same day, kind of like you did. But they were always saying to me, where's the other Vietnam veterans? Where are they? And of course, they were going to college. They were starting families. They were in jobs. They were doing things. I imagine you're looking for this last group of veterans that came back over the last 12, 13 years. Where are those young veterans and the ones that have been wounded? Are they joining, or are you doing the same thing the World War II guys were doing to us?
We're doing about the same thing. We're wondering where they're at. Why aren't they joining? We've come up with the same basic answers as to why they're not joining, but we want them to join.
And by joining, they can add their voice.
They can have their voice.
When you go up on the hill and you're lobbying for veterans' issues, the bigger the membership you have, the louder a voice you have when you're talking to our legislators over there.
That is correct.
And then, of course, as you said, you've got these fundraisers all year and got lots of people that are approaching your organization looking for help. And so the trick is, let's raise some money, and when they approach us, and if we're the best person to help or the best organization, then we get the opportunity to write the check.
We don't usually have a problem with not having an organization ask us for money or donations. We don't turn anybody away. We've never had to do that, which was very fortunate, I think. So
that's good, and if it's a big problem, there's always other organizations that can help you with it.
That's correct.
Glenn, we just got a few moments left. Any final thoughts for our listeners and for those Purple Heart recipients out there that maybe don't belong to the military or the Purple Heart yet?
Well, we want them to seek us out. They can look for our information on the web. If they have the internet, just type in Minnesota Department of the Military Order of the Purple Heart, and it'll have all the information, contact information on there about how to start the process off. I have one other message for veterans out there that are hiding, as we call them. If you need medical help, please join the VA system. Get in there. Even if you think there's nothing wrong with you, get into the system so that you've got your foot in the door, so that if you do need treatment of some sort for whatever reason, you've got your foot in the door and you don't have to go through that. And the sooner the better.
So go see your county veteran service officer and get it done.
Get it done.
Glenn, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
This is Glenn Backe, the department commander of the Military Order of the Purple Heart here in Minnesota. Joining me now is Kim Graves, the director of the regional office of the Veterans Benefits Administration here in Minneapolis. Kim, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for giving us an opportunity to talk to your listeners today.
Well, we're kind of excited to talk to you so that we can hear what kind of progress is being made at the end of the first year for the new Secretary of the VA.
Well, I'll tell you, Secretary McDonald has brought so much energy to the organization. As you may know, he came from the private sector, a business background, and has really done a terrific job working with the entire organization to move us forward in helping us ensure that all of our veterans are getting all the benefits and services that they've earned.
Now, Kim, it's my understanding that there were some pockets around the country that were really having some trouble, such as down in Arizona. But here in Minnesota, things have been going much better than some of those hot spots, as I understand it.
Well, I can talk more specifically about the claims process, the disability compensation and pension process, which is what my staff does here at the regional office. And just to give you a little background, if I may, since 2011, the Veterans Benefits Administration has undergone the most significant transformation in our history. And we've been driving to improve the delivery of benefits and services to our nation's veterans, their families, and their survivors. Our main goal in the claims processing arena is to ensure that no veteran waits longer than 125 days for a high-quality decision on their claim for benefits. To give you some perspective nationally, at our peak in March of 2013, we had 611,000 veterans who had been waiting longer than 125 days for their decisions. As of this morning, that number is down to 115,000. That's the lowest it's been since we started measuring the backlog in 2007. We know we still have work to do, but we're very proud of the progress that we've made in driving that down, that wait time down for our veterans waiting for their benefit decisions.
So what's the wait time locally here in Minnesota?
Depending on how you look at the data, because we do have several different types of claims that we work. If you look at the collective group of cases for our veterans waiting for compensation decisions, we're about 94 days.
So a little better than the national average. Are we still processing claims from outside of Minnesota here?
One of the things that is making us better across the nation is that we're working with a philosophy of the right next veteran. So that means we are able now with our electronic system to target cases to where the next available person with the right skills are to give that veteran a high-quality decision. So we are really working for veterans all over the nation. We still obviously have our Minnesota veterans who are very special to us, but we also are working to help veterans from all over the country.
Kim, we've just got about 30 seconds left. What are you seeing for challenges ahead in the next year?
I think our challenge remains just ensuring that every single decision that we make for our veterans is the right decision in the most timely manner. We want to make sure that every single veteran gets all the benefits that he or she has earned through their service and sacrifice to our country.
Well, Kim, we're cheering for you to get that job done and take good care of our veterans, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom, and I want to thank all of our veterans for making us the greatest nation in the world.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
That was Kim Graves, the director of the Regional Office of Veterans Benefits Administration. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Jerry Kaiser, Lieutenant Colonel Terry Sieben, Glenn Bakke, Kim Graves, Commissioner Larry Shelito of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week from the annual MACV stand-down at the Boy Scout Base Camp at Fort Snelling. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.